When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everybody. This episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored by iTalki, a service that you can use to organise conversations and English lessons with native speakers online through Skype. It's a great way to work on your spoken fluency in English from the comfort of your own home. And the cool thing is that because you're a Lepster, because you listen to this podcast, when you buy some lessons on iTalki, they will give you a voucher for a free lesson. So if you really want to fast track your English to fluency, you can do it by talking to people or getting lessons on iTalki. Just go to teacherluke.co.uk/talk or click an iTalki logo on my website. And remember, when you buy some talking time, iTalki will send you a voucher, which is equivalent to a free lesson, basically. Not bad at all. Now then, here is your new episode and here's the jingle. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, folks. Welcome to the podcast. How are you today? I hope you're doing all right. I hope you're having a nice August. I imagine it's August when you're listening to this, unless you have pulled this episode out of the episode archive months and months later. But I expect for most of you listening to this, it's August. I'm on holiday at the moment, but because of the magic of the internet, this episode has been automatically published. But I'll be just sort of relaxing on holiday, I imagine, while you actually listen to this. But anyway, in this episode of the podcast, I'm talking once again to Andy Johnson, my friend and former colleague from the London School of English, which is in London. What a surprise. Andy, you remember Andy? He looks a bit like Moby. Remember that? Yes, of course. Andy has been on this podcast four or five times before. So if you are a regular listener, you'll know his voice already. Andy is an English teacher, a marathon runner, and a father of two children. In fact, his second son was born very recently. And in this conversation, you will hear us talking about such things as the pain of stepping on Lego. You know Lego, I'm sure it's the same name all around the world. Lego, that toy for children that allows them to be creative by constructing things. Lego is like all these different bricks of different sizes. And you stick them together. They've got like little nodules that allow them to stick together. And you can make anything. A house, a car, a helicopter, the Death Star from Star Wars. Often Lego gets left on the floor, and if you have ever stepped on a piece of Lego, you'll know that it's probably the most painful thing in the world. I imagine it's more painful than any other kind of pain that you can name. Much more painful than childbirth, for example. Oh no, that's impossible. Nothing's more painful than that. Anyway, stepping on a piece of Lego is an incredibly painful experience. So we talk about that for a bit. We also talk about recording the podcast in what used to be the boss's office at the London School of English. We talk about developments in Andy's job and his career, his next conference talk about self-directed learning. Andy tends to do things like the IATEFL conference every year, and he does a different talk each time. And it looks like his next talk will be about self-directed learning, which is quite appropriate for people listening to this podcast, because I imagine that most of you are involved in a bit of self-directed learning, I expect. For example, you chose to listen to this podcast. There might be other things that you're doing as well that involve learning on your own, let's say, rather than going to a language school and being told what to do in a classroom. You might be self-directing your learning. And if that is the case, well, I'm sure it is because you're listening to this, Andy would actually like to know a little bit more about the way in which you learn by yourself. I'll tell you more about this at the end of our conversation, but basically there's a little survey that Andy would like you to do. And if you check the page for this episode, you'll see a link to Andy's survey. And you can then tell him a little bit more about the way in which you self-direct your learning. And that will help him to prepare for his next conference talk. We talk about where Andy comes from and his accent, including the ways that we both say certain words. So we kind of compare our accents, which are not that different, but slightly different. We compare the ways in which we say certain words, like the words bath, grass, laugh, podcast, ask, and after. So a little exploration of Andy's accent. We talk about the time when my dad visited the London School of English to do a talk in front of loads of students. So we talk about that, that moment in history. And we talk a little bit about the ways in which British and American people speak English too. So this is part one of a two-part conversation. Part two should arrive in your vicinity before too long, and in that one we talk about something completely different. But without any further ado, I will now let you listen to part one of my conversation with Andy Johnson, and here we go.
I've got a really sore toe.
Really? Why have you got a sore toe? Oh,
it's a children's toy related.
Oh, yeah?
I can talk about it in the podcast if you like.
Well, you are already, because I've pressed record.
Have you?
Yeah. So tell me about your children's toy-related incident and
Seamless.
Your toe.
So, well, it's not actually a story. I don't think I'm going to tell it. I just stepped on one of my son's bits of Lego this morning.
Oh.
And I don't know what I've done to my toe as a result.
Oh, dear.
But it's all turned black. It's disgusting.
That's what Lego does to a toe if you step on it.
Yeah, it's lethal stuff.
Yeah, it is.
And I did a really long run yesterday. I did 16 kilometres yesterday. So I should be hobbling around as a result of that. But my legs are fine. It's just the Lego has cropped me.
I'm surprised they're not using Lego in military situations.
I think they might be.
You know, like D-Day, for example. You know, the Germans built very fortified defences on the beach. They should have just spread Lego all over the beach. And that obviously would have sold, but they had boots, didn't they?
What's the worst bit of Lego you've ever stood on?
I don't know. I think it was probably something like a medium sized sixer.
I take no, yeah, sixer. That's quite bad. But the worst ones are the four and the twos. You know, so four long, two wide, because they just really grind in.
Four long and two wide.
Yeah, one of those.
Oh, I see.
That's really going to hurt.
Like an eighter.
It's going to dig in. An eighter. Yeah. It's going to dig in.
Right.
It's going to hurt a lot.
They're the most common type, aren't they?
Yeah. I think they're the most painful, therefore the most common. I think
Right. Everyone
thinks Lego is this benevolent, wonderful company that's here to advance children's creativity. It's just there to hurt adults.
Right, I see. Yeah. Lego and banana skins. Although Lego, people talk about banana skins, or it's in comic books as if that's like a common thing. But have you ever seen someone slip on a banana skin?
No. In comic books, it's like the slipperiest substance known to man.
Yeah. I think, again, that the army should be using these things. They should just be spreading Lego and banana skins all over battlefields. The World War One could have been solved within a few weeks.
You can imagine wave after wave of obstacles. Oh, they've put banana skins down.
What is it, Sergeant? Banana skins. No!
And that takes out a load of them, and then they're like, what next? Oh, Lego!
Reports are coming in, sir, that... what is it? What is it, Captain?
Aiders. They're aiders, Captain.
They're using Lego, sir. Not Lego! What kind of Lego is it? Is it flat fours? No, sir, it's worse than that. They got aiders. Yeah, that would be a nightmare, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Thank God that's not happening.
Yeah.
Yet.
I just feel like this is... I think it's... My son's only got a little bit of Lego because he's only two. Mm-hmm. And so this is only going to get worse. This is my life from now on.
Right.
I'm just going to gradually just... I'm probably going to be in a wheelchair before too long. Because I've stood on so much Lego that I can no longer walk.
Did you stand on the Lego before you ran 16 kilometers?
No, ran 16K yesterday. It was this morning. My son's got this thing at the moment where he wakes up like at a stupid time in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I tell you, on Saturday night, we've just had a little boy who's 6 weeks old.
Yeah, congratulations,
by the way. Thank you, mate. And it's like him and his brother have been talking, and they've got together a little plan to make sure that one of them is awake at all times.
Right.
Because literally, my wife was like trying to get Calvin to go to sleep, and he finally fell asleep at 4 o'clock in the morning. So she'd been going for quite a long time. He finally settled him, and he was asleep. And the moment she got into bed, our eldest son Ezra, he gets up.
Oh.
4 o'clock in the morning, comes into our room, and he says, "Daddy, I need to play."
I need to play as well.
Not I want to play, I need to play. So I was like, oh, God, okay. So I took him into the lounge and got his toys out and put some TV on for him. And then I went back to bed.
At what time was that?
4 o'clock.
Oh, God.
But he was, you know, I just knew that there was no point me reasoning with him and saying, no, Ezzy, it's the middle of the night, go back to bed. He wasn't going to do it. So, yeah, so he played. And then this morning it was a bit later. It was 5:30 this morning. But what he does is... He's super sleepy. He'll just lie on the couch and watch a bit of TV, and he's really nice and cute and cuddly.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you go back to bed, he gets all his toys out. So by the time I got up about an hour later, kind of stumbling into the living room,
yeah,
fast asleep, half asleep still, yeah, and then ouch.
Oh.
It's like he'd laid them all out on the floor to catch me out.
Right, to see if... So he knew if someone was coming.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's always me that gets it. So, yeah, so I've been hobbling around all day
with
a Lego-related injury.
Someone needs to invent some, like, Lego-proof slippers or something.
Yeah, right. Well, I think they're just called shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, I need to start going to bed wearing boots, then I'll be all right.
Yeah, that's clearly the way forward.
The problem is people keep saying to me, "You're all right, you're okay, you look like you're in real pain," and then it's like... It's nothing, because if I tell the story, it's just like, yeah, okay, it's a piece of Lego.
Stepped
on a piece of Lego. How bad can it be? But believe me, it's really painful.
No, I think that anyone who's ever stepped on Lego can, you know, verify that it's the sharpest substance in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, it's sharper than a diamond, isn't it, Lego? I mean, you know, like in drilling.
Yeah.
You know, in drilling for oil, they use diamond-tipped drill bits.
They use diamond-tipped Lego.
They should be using Lego-tipped drill bits. that would go through, you know, the earth far more effectively than diamond.
Apparently, they cut diamonds with Lego.
Is that right? Yeah,
that's true. Fact.
Right.
That's a fact.
The only thing that it can beat a diamond is a Lego-ater. An ater, by the way, I don't know if you're picking up on this, ladies and gents, but an ater, it's like the nickname you use for a certain piece of Lego. So when I was a kid, my brother and I had a big box full of Lego. It's just this box full of it. And you'd like sort of drag your hand through it. You know that sound of the sound of Lego? Mm. So we'd be dragging our hands through, trying to find the right pieces to build the thing that we were trying to build. And it would be like, you know, we'd be speaking in code to each other. It's like we were a couple of dentists or something.
Yeah.
You know, like, have you got an eater? Have you got a flat fourer? You know, I need a single tour, you know, of this weird language that we developed. And I think it's the same everywhere. Like, even kids who, you know, didn't ever meet and never shared this language, they develop the same terminology independent from each other.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it, the sort of requirements of the situation lead to this certain language being created, and the same language is created in different places.
Well, my dad, when we were kids, I've got a twin brother and an older sister, and because we've got a Swedish mother, I think being half Scandinavian, you're kind of conditioned to play with Lego, and we had so much Lego, and my dad built like a big storage trunk for all the Lego, and it had like separate drawers in it.
Nice.
And they'd be divided up. So, and I think the only reason he did this is because he once stepped on some Lego and he thought, right, that's it. I'm going to build him a storage box. That's how my dad speaks, by the way. And, you know, it had like all sorts of bits. But I remember that my favorite drawer was like divided into like 24 separate little things. And that's where you put all the really little technical bits, like little aerials and steering wheels.
Lights and stuff.
Heads. We had a little bit full of heads, right, just Lego heads, which is a bit. You know, a bit weird.
A bit creepy.
But yeah. So standing on Lego is quite a new thing for me because I never used to do it as a kid. I probably did, but I've forgotten about it. But it's because our Lego was always, you know, neatly. It was built into something, so
Do you know where that box is now?
We sold it. Oh, we got to like, I think it was like maybe 14, 15. And my brother and I were like, yeah, we're too old for this. We should sell it. And we probably sold it for far too little for what it was worth.
Well, considering what it's worth to you now, probably, you know, you could, that's obviously what you need now.
Well,
what you're, it's like Star Wars, this is.
Yeah.
So the same thing happens through the generations, that your dad like built this Lego box because he stepped on a piece of Lego.
Yeah.
No!
Yeah.
Like that. And now you're going through exactly the same thing. It's exactly like Star Wars.
Yeah. I should never have let it go. And the thing is, I remember very clearly what I bought with the money.
Yeah.
I got this horrible green suede jacket. Like a green bomber jacket. It was just, I mean, at the time, it looked good. Yeah. It looked really, really good. But now, actually, it didn't look good. It must have looked awful. But I was 14 years old. I didn't know. I didn't know what I was doing.
Priorities, right? It's all about priorities. So, Andy Johnson is on the podcast, listeners. I think you've worked that out by now. You're half Swedish, are you?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Which half is your mum's side?
Mum's side, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, does that make you... Does that make you any different? I mean, do you feel half Swedish?
I do. Yeah, I do. Well, because we spent a lot of time when we were kids over in Sweden. So we go over every summer. And we used to speak a lot of Swedish with our grandparents. And then I always remember coming back at the end of the summer to go back to school and having to flip back into English. And I remember it being quite difficult.
Yeah, really?
But yeah, I mean, my middle name is Björn, after Björn Borg, the tennis player.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Specifically after him?
Yeah, well, my mum was like well into tennis when I was born in 76, which is, I think, the first year he won Wimbledon, or I don't know. So he was very, very popular with the ladies, as I'm sure you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And so that I took his name as my middle name. But we've all got some kind of Swedish name, all three kids. But yeah, ever since I was a kid, I've always felt that side of my culture very keenly.
Yeah.
And I've got more family in Sweden than I do in England. And I think I said on the podcast before, maybe I didn't, but we've now got, my wife is half Greek and half South African.
Yeah.
So our kids are like proper mongrels. They're like quarter everything.
Yeah.
But yeah.
How many different quarters are there in there? It's like six different quarters.
How many quarters do you think?
I don't know. There's like
how English, many quarters are there normally?
Well, four, right? I imagine. English, Swedish, South African,
and Greek.
And Greek.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's four. I'm just checking the maths, you know. Just have to fact check all of the maths on this podcast. You know, because we wouldn't want to make any numerical errors.
I think this is why they wake up all through the night.
Yeah.
Because they just don't know their identity. They wake up going, what am I? What am I?
Which quarter am I? Really? Okay. Do you speak any Swedish now?
I do. I do a little bit. Not as much as I used to, because I lived in Sweden for a while and I used to speak a lot more then, but I think we were having a chat before we were recording, and Luke was saying that in Paris, you'll often go and order something in Paris and they'll reply in English.
Right.
Had exactly the same thing happen to me in Sweden.
Right.
And it used to really annoy me. But as soon as people found out that you're English, they'd be like, oh, can I practice my English with you? My English is terrible. And of course, Scandinavians tend to be very good at English. So I'm like, no, your English isn't terrible. My Swedish really is bad. But yeah, I mean, I learned a lot when I lived there, but I haven't used it for such a long time. You know, I haven't got space in my brain anymore for languages.
No, because
they're just all disappearing.
Lego problems and...
First world problems.
Right, yeah.
Lego on the toe, that's it.
Right.
You've got no time to think about learning anything when you've... The struggle is real, Luke.
But you also said you ran 16 kilometres today.
No, yesterday.
Yesterday,
yeah.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
But you stepped on the Lego this morning, right?
Yeah.
I see,
yeah.
Okay. We're going to talk about your running and stuff later on, because I know lots of my listeners listen to this podcast when they're running, so it might be interesting to hear someone talking about it while they're actually doing it. Where are we, by the way, at this moment, Andy?
We are... in my workplace. So we're at the London School of English in Holland Park Gardens. Specifically, we're in what used to be the chairman of the school's office, which has kind of been turned into a bit of a recording studio. So it's, they've put soundproofing on the wall, so hopefully it sounds good for you today. And it's, we basically use this room now for online lessons and online delivery.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, and you're lucky, actually, because this time last week there were no free rooms in the building at all. We were very busy. So, yeah, it's a Monday afternoon, last day of July. Sunny outside. If I open the door, we can hear tennis going on because the school backs onto a tennis club.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where we are.
Looking good. And so is July a busy period for the London School of English?
Yeah, typically July is the busiest month for most schools in the UK because that's when everyone else is on their holiday. August is busy, not always as busy as July, but July and August, September, they're the three busiest months of the year.
I see. So what's actually going on then in the school at this moment as we're talking?
So we've got general English courses, business English courses, legal English courses. I think you've taught all of those.
Yeah, yeah.
In your time here.
As my listeners know, I used to work here. In fact, it was quite odd coming to visit today because I came from... near where I used to live. So I got the same bus that I used to take every day to come here to work, you know, the same exact route. And then I got off at exactly the same bus stop, walked the same, you know, the same way to get to the school, walked in. And it was like, you know, weirdly, it was like I hadn't been away. You know, I queued up for my lunch just like I used to. And some of the other teachers who I used to know were like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
You know, like they didn't know I was going to be here. So,
and there are others that kind of do that thing where they're just going to go, you're right, yeah. And then they're like, what? They do like a double take. They just think, oh, no, hang on, you don't work here anymore.
What?
You've not been here for 5 years.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny. But yeah, it's nice. It reminds me of like some of the good experiences I had teaching here in these rooms. Like next door, there's a class going on. I used to teach in there. So what do you, I mean, when I left here about 5 years ago, Andy, I think you were probably a teacher. You were doing some management work as well.
Yeah.
What do you do these days?
Nowadays, I'm responsible for all the online learning. So I've always been interested in online learning. And last year we set up, or the school is part of a group, the London School Group, and that has different companies. And last year they set up an online learning company. And that's kind of my responsibility. So it's doing online courses for students that book courses here in the school. We also sell courses online and we do virtual training, that kind of stuff, and a lot of work with companies, mainly in London, weirdly enough. But we've got a lot of we do a lot of work with organizations in the UK.
So these are companies that, for example, need to set up some English training for their for their staff, and they want to do something online, right?
Yeah, typically because of economies, time, that kind of thing. So one of our biggest customers is a restaurant chain, and they simply don't have the time to send people here to do lessons, so we do them online with them instead.
I see. So what, they're like direct sort of Skype type lessons, or like online platforms? Or?
Bit of both. So we've got a learner management system, an online learning platform, and on that we can put loads of things. So we've got six different course types, or we often do bespoke stuff. We build stuff for the customer and that sits on the platform. Often they just do that as sort of self-study. Often they'll combine it with Skype tuition. We also have a virtual classroom that we do stuff with. It's a mix of anything, really. Anything that happens digitally or online is my responsibility.
Do you think things are going in that direction? Because, I mean, you know, the London School of English has been going for years. It's like over 100 years old. And, you know, we've got teachers here at the school who've been working here for, oh, I don't know, how long?
Over 100 years.
Over 100 years. I mean, someone like Francis, who's been on this podcast, he was in episode 70-something, talking about music and language.
Right, yeah.
But someone like Francis has been working here for, what, 30 years?
30 years. I mean, I've been here 10 years this summer.
10 years.
10 years. I don't know where that went.
Yeah. Yeah, time flies.
Yeah. And I'm like one of the more junior members of staff.
Right.
But yeah, we've got people who've been here 25, 30 years. It's incredible. I mean, it's a good place to work, I think, because you get a lot of variety. And it's a nice environment to work in as well. And the pay is quite good.
But that model of an institution in London, which receives students from around the world who've travelled to come here, and they come in and they do classes during the day, and then they're you know, in London in the evening or whatever. That model, is that, you know, that's the model that's been going for, you know, God knows how many years, but certainly here at the London School of English for ages. Is that changing, do you think?
It is. I think that model is under threat somewhat. I mean, 15, 20 years ago, you used to have beginners coming here to do English. But because the standard of language training, particularly at school, at like junior school, when children are learning, they kind of come out of school having a reasonably good grasp of English already. So in terms of the sheer number of people who want to learn English and who need to learn English, I think that number is still quite high, but the number that can afford to jump on a plane and take time out of their work to come and do a course.
They have to jump out of a plane?
They have to. Did I say jump out?
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good. I quite like that idea.
The number of people who have to jump out of a plane is increasing, oddly enough.
That's how they arrive here at
the
school.
That's how they arrive. They parachute in.
They don't tell you that in the promotional materials, but you do have to skydive into the facility.
Yeah, if you
jump onto a plane and jump off a plane,
if you're scared of heights, then it's a bit of a worry.
Just close your eyes.
But
it just feels like wind. You're not scared of wind, right?
Who's scared of wind?
Just close your eyes and you'll be fine. Anyway, so the number of people, what were you saying? The number of beginners, maybe there are fewer beginners.
There's few beginners. The standard of language training in people's own countries is much higher. Certainly the level of competition for us is much higher than it ever used to be. It's this school's quite interesting because it's always... Initially, it was a very big operation. They had, like, I think, three centres on Oxford Street, and they used to have 500, 600 students. And in the 60s, the owner decided that he wanted to just do something much more niche or boutique. I don't know how to explain that word. But yeah. Something more specialised, I think, is a better way of doing it.
Smaller with a more specific appeal.
Yeah. And so they moved out here to Holland Park, took over this building, which is used to be a big private house. And I think the previous tenants was a ballet school, the Royal Academy of Dance.
Really?
Yeah. So it's got a really interesting history, this building. But he wanted to just focus on ESP, so English for Business, English for real specialist stuff. So they've developed a whole bunch of really interesting courses. And as a teacher, as we both used to be, and well, you still are, I think the real attraction of working in a place like this is you weren't just doing general English all the time. You were doing all sorts of things. Yeah. I mean, we taught human resources, journalists, legal English.
Yeah. Name a thing. We taught them. Like I, some of the weird stuff, I taught English for the oil and gas industry.
That's right, yeah.
English for Swedish journalists. English for French doctors.
I taught a Playboy model once.
You taught a Playboy model?
That was good.
Yeah.
Enjoyed that week.
All sorts of...
Thai royal family. We had the royal family from Thailand
in. Princess from Thailand, that's right.
Football coaches.
Yeah. Yeah. The professional footballer from Brazil, the World Cup winner.
Yeah.
Haide Oliveira. Yeah, he was here. Yeah, so it's cool.
Yeah, so, and I think, you know, but to answer your question, I think the traditional market for places like this is definitely decreasing. And I think increasingly schools are needing to focus on the whole experience side of things, because instead of selling language courses, what a lot of companies like us actually do is they sell like the whole language experience and the travel experience. So it's almost like booking a holiday, yeah, of which part of it is language training. But the main part is about, you know, seeing London or seeing Canterbury, where our other centre is, and you know, just learning things about yourself more than anything else.
Yeah. Okay. Now, when you were on this podcast before, you were talking about the talk you did about millennials.
Yes.
At the French teaching conference and
that's
about
right,
the IATEFL conference in Glasgow.
Yeah.
That's good. Now, as an English teacher, you do get the opportunities to do these talks, and you're always trying to get me to do them. I've never done one yet. Well, I did one with you.
Did on me.
The highly acclaimed talk.
Award-winning.
The award-winning talk we did together. But since then, I haven't done any of those things. I might do. But you're planning to do some more in the coming year, aren't you?
Yeah,
you've got a new talk planned, I think.
I've been asked to do this. I've been asked to do a talk in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And I'm then also going to do it in Malta as well. And it kind of builds on what we've just been talking about. And it's the idea that, well, if people aren't coming to language schools anymore to learn English, where are they going? And one of the things that I was really interested in when I was doing the whole millennials talk was this idea of self-directed learning. So the idea that you've got so much choice out there in terms of how you learn your language and how you improve your language, you don't really need to rely on classroom instruction. So the talk is really, it's about where people are going to learn language. And I think, you know, something like your podcast is a really good example, because people are developing communities of learning. And, you know, I've been on your message boards, and I've been on
my comment section,
your comment section. Yeah. And it's quite amazing how people are using that. And there is this genuine language learning going on there. Yeah. There's a lot of pictures of cakes, which shouldn't be there, Jack. But also, you know, there's, you know, I go on every now and again, and there'll be like genuine questions about how do you use this? How do you use that? And it's not just you that always gives the answers. It's people teach each other.
Yeah.
And that's quite powerful, that kind of peer learning thing.
Yeah. And all these teams as well, like the Orion transcription team, the Andromeda proofreading team, the comment section crew. There are these groups. There's also meetups happening.
Mm.
People get together in different cities, in different places.
There was one in London recently.
There was one in London. There was one on Sunday in London. Yeah, London Lepsters, who didn't come, you missed out because we had a nice time. But Thomas, sorry if you didn't find us. But we were just there. We were literally standing there right outside the entrance to the pub.
Had you reserved a big table?
We didn't. Yeah, we hadn't reserved a big table or anything. It was just the two of us standing there. So anyway, but no, in Moscow, in St. Petersburg, there was one in Prague.
Mm.
There's been a number of them in Tokyo. So yeah, all these groups of people that don't have a teacher at the head.
Mm.
It's not a classroom. They're just finding ways of getting together in various communities, either online or offline. Self-directed learning.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing because it's entirely free. It's very democratized. And it just takes a few people to champion it and to create a community of learning, and I think that's really fascinating. And so that's what the talk is going to explore. It's going to be giving a few examples of you know, such things. I mean, including your podcast, of course. So that's, I've got quite a bit of time to write it. I've got till November before I need to give that talk. So okay. It's still kind of coming together in my head.
Mm. Mm. I'm sure it'll be very good. I look forward to hearing more about that. Mm. So I was going to ask you, Andy, what
yes.
did you say? You said something about something. I can't remember what you said, but you said a certain word. When you say certain words, Andy, you do pronounce them in a slightly different way.
Oh, okay? Really?
Yeah, just a few words. I've noted a few of these things down. Where are you from originally? I mean, you don't have a strong accent.
Yeah.
We're talking now about accents because it's something that I'm always trying to encourage my listeners to sort of be aware of, you know, as they're listening to voices. I think, you know, in a when English is your second language, it can be very hard to identify the accent.
Yeah.
And often what people notice is the general tone of the voice rather than specific things like consonant sounds or vowel sounds or intonation and things like that. So I think that you speak like really clearly. You don't have a strong accent exactly. But, you know, where are you from originally?
Well, originally Manchester. So I grew up there, went to school there, and then I went to university in a place called Lancaster, which is even further north. It's like in the Lake District, maybe an hour and a half north of Manchester.
Mm.
But then after university...
I'm just pointing that one out. I'm going to write that down. Yeah, go on.
After university, when I was 22, I moved to London. And I'm now 41, so I've spent pretty much half my life in London. And as a result, I think particularly through language teaching, you learn to lose your accent. Mm. And it is strange, because when I speak to my brother, who still lives up north, my accent, it comes out really quickly.
Yeah.
I don't think my accent is that strong anymore, but every now and again, somebody who's not really used to a northern accent will pick up on it, like you have. Mm. Whereas if I speak to my family, they just go, oh, you sound really southern.
Really?
But, you know, I've spent most of my life in London now, so.
Yeah. But just little things that sort of reveal that you're, for me, it's that shows that you're from the north. Is that a bad thing to say? The North, by the way.
Well, it's an area.
Yeah.
It's a region.
Yeah.
You're not even from a region. You're just from the middle.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Just from the Midlands, the vague Midlands.
The Midlands. Nobody wants to be in the Midlands.
I don't know. It's
you want to be north or south. You don't want to be in the middle.
The Midlands are underestimated. The Midlands have got a lot more going for them than people realise. Like in the south, like in London, a lot of people don't even realise the Midlands exist. You know, they think if it's above the M25 or if it's above Watford, it's the north.
Yeah.
Because that's where people speak with, you know, a slightly different accent. There is a cut-off point, I'm not sure where it is, where certain vowel sounds are pronounced differently. Like, for example, these ones. Like, I'd say bath and grass and laugh and podcast and ask a question and after.
Yeah.
And how do you say those words?
Can I have a look at them?
Yeah, these ones here.
I see, you've been making notes while I've been talking. It's very disconcerting.
Well, you didn't say these first three, but you said the others. Go on, say them for me.
Bath. How would you say it?
Bath.
Grass.
Grass.
Laugh.
Laugh.
Podcast.
Podcast.
Ask.
Ask.
After.
After. So it's really the, how I say it's it, the, ah, and you say ah.
Ah, yeah.
And that's the basic sort of, I guess it's the north-south divide, but I think in the Midlands, people will also say bath, grass, laugh, podcast, ask, and after, you know, like that. But that's just an interesting little feature that I think it's not too difficult for my listeners to notice.
But your accent softened as well, because you just turned it on a little bit there, didn't you?
Yeah.
You turned on your Brummy accent.
Well, I never had a really strong Brummy accent, because we lived out in the sticks.
Yeah.
We lived in an area where people did speak with an accent. But because, I don't know, because the household I lived in, you know, my parents didn't have an accent, really. When I say didn't have an accent, my parents spoke with basic received pronunciation, you know, and that was all, you know, I think they made an effort to try and speak like that, even though they're both from Yorkshire originally.
Really? My dad's from Yorkshire as well.
Yeah, my dad's from Leeds and my mum was from Barnsley area.
Oh, wow.
So it's, you know, they used to speak, my dad used to speak a bit more like that, you know, from Leeds.
And now he's a bit more softly spoken. And he goes, hello, Lukey. Luke's dad came to the school once because
they know him from the podcast.
Of course,
regular contributor. But my dad came here once
to give a talk about journalism.
Yeah, that's right. Because on our special courses, on our special courses, on the London School of English's special courses, you invite guest speakers to come. And they do like talks for an hour. Yeah. It's brilliant. Really.
We were both teaching the same course, weren't we?
We were teaching the
Swedish
same
journalists.
Swedish journalists. And so we were preparing the course. We were thinking, who are we going to bring in to talk to this group of Swedish journalists about something journalistic? And I was like, well, maybe my dad could do it.
We couldn't find anyone. So we thought, well, my dad definitely can't do it. He doesn't know anything about journalism. Luke, your dad?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. It's like, since we haven't got anyone else, we might as well invite him. So my dad agreed to do it and he came in and stuff and he did a talk about journalism, which was interesting.
It was excellent, actually. It was really good.
I have to say, it was cool to have him and he gave a really good talk, but also it was sort of unexpectedly embarrassing for me because I suddenly realized that, like, my dad, you know, my dad was going to come to my workplace.
Yeah.
And I mean, my dad's nice and cool and everything, but it was a bit weird. It suddenly felt like I was a child again.
The two things I remember about it, he was dressed from head to toe in black.
Yeah,
he had like a black roll neck or black polo neck or something.
Black shirt with black jeans, black shoes. So he looked like Johnny Cash, for goodness sake.
Or a hitman.
Yeah, or an assassin.
Yeah.
Or if Johnny Cash was an assassin, which he could have been, considering he dressed all in black.
And the other thing I remember is he kept calling you Lukey. Oh. Lukey.
Yeah. I don't think he realised that he was doing that.
No.
Like, the one thing that happened was that he was in the middle of his talk, and I think he was trying to project something on a screen.
He had a technical issue, didn't he?
He had a slight technical issue. Yeah. And I was sitting, like, way over on the side and at the back, you know, just sort of observing. And he turned, and, you know, bearing in mind there was probably about 30 Swedish journalists in the room and all the teachers and stuff. And he turned and he said, Lukey, can you help me with this? And I was like, oh, God, I can't believe he called me Lukey. How embarrassing.
It was good. It was good. We've been calling you Lukey ever since.
Yeah. So where were we? That's it, where you come from. So originally you're from the Manchester area, but you've been living in London for ages. And so,
yeah,
you don't have a strong accent or anything. I just thought it was worth sort of mentioning the way in which you said those words, which is like a typical feature of English that you find in sort of areas just north of Watford, probably, or from the Midlands up. That I would say Bath, but it's you'd say Bath. So you can see, even though I'm technically from the Midlands, I still say Bath and grass and laugh, even though some of my mates from back home would say Bath, grass, laugh.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, it's one of those things that I think is quite noticeable if you're British, but I wonder how... I don't think it prevents people from understanding what the word is, I'm not sure even sure how much... people who perhaps don't speak English as a first language would even notice this.
I don't think Americans even realise.
Yeah.
You never hear American comedians or anything sort of picking up on that, do you? I don't think they know.
The only thing that they always pick up on is the difference between ass and arse.
Right.
Because they think arse is really kind of a very British way of saying your ass.
Yeah, yeah. And they, you know, for Americans, I think there are two versions of English. There's... you know, this kind of Queen's English, this posh sort of thing, which they find condescending. And every bad guy in all Hollywood films speaks in this, you know, evil English accent, the high class kind of thing. Mm. And then there's Cockney. So, mate, I'm a Cockney. And
Mary Poppins thing.
Mary Poppins. God blimey, governor. And so basically for Americans, English people are members of the royal family or they are Cockneys, Cockney chimney sweeps. From the 19th century.
When I was training to be a teacher, I went out to Barcelona to do my teacher training course. And there was like 25 of us on the course. And it was 24 Americans and Andy.
Oh, God.
And they used to just laugh at my accent all the time. Right. And like on the second day, this guy, he was a really cool guy in the end. But this is how this is the first thing he said to me when I walked into the classroom. He went... tally-ho, Andy, how about some bloody beef? And I'm like...
tally-ho, no one ever says that.
No one says that.
Tally-ho, Andy, pip-pip, how about some bloody beef? And you were like, excuse me?
I was just, smiling politely. What are you talking about? Yeah, no one ever says that either. Bloody beef, have you ever said that?
No, bloody beef. Yeah. Well, I mean, we do say bloody hell.
Bloody hell, yeah.
You bloody idiot, but... how about some bloody beef? No, I do find that annoying, I have to say, when, you know, it's just like the stereotypical sort of British accent. Anyway, now, we've been talking for 36 minutes.
Have we?
Yeah.
Already?
yeah. That's the way it goes on this
podcast. I've got a job to do. Oh, there you go.
we just talk nonsense and time passes. That's the way it works. I thought that we could move on to talk about your running stuff.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I can just press pause.
Yep.
And then that can be the next episode.
Okay.
Right? Okay, good. So let's do that.
All right then. Cheerio, everyone. Tally-ho.
Cheerio. Tally-ho, everyone.
Off to have some bloody beef.
Pip, pip. Speak to you in the next episode. Okay, so that was the end of part one of my conversation with Andy. You'll be able to listen to part two soon, I expect. Now, in the middle of that conversation, you heard us talking about Andy's next IATEFL conference talk. I mentioned this at the beginning of the episode, if you remember. So at the next IATEFL conference and other teaching conferences, which will be coming up over the next year, Andy is planning on doing a presentation about self-directed learning. You heard him talking about it in the episode. So Andy would like... some help from you in preparing for the talk. He needs to do some research and he'd like to ask you a few questions about your English learning, particularly how you use this podcast, my website, and any other resources for learning English. So we're talking about learning in a classroom. Okay, that's where you go to, you join a school and you take classes with a teacher in a classroom. And then learning using any other resources, for example, this website, teacherluke.co.uk, my podcast, or any other resources that you find on the internet. That's basically where you sort of direct your own learning rather than following a course program. Okay, so what Andy's interested in is
is the self-directed learning. Okay, so he'd like basically to ask you to do a quick survey for him. Okay, which is going to help him to prepare for his talk. He's created a quick questionnaire, and you can find it on the page for this episode. You'll see a big link. It says Andy's Survey. Something like Andy's Survey. Click the link, answer the questions. It'll just take you a few minutes, and you will help Andy a lot in his presentation. Basically, the survey asks you how useful Luke's English Podcast or teacherluke.co.uk or other sites are for learning English, and how you find those things, how you've found those different resources. Andy also asks whether you pay for additional language tuition or whether you would pay for additional language tuition. And by additional language tuition, we're still talking about those resources for self-directed learning. So do you pay for any of that stuff that you're using, or would you pay, for example, would you pay for Luke's English Podcast? Now that's Andy asking the question, not me, okay? So I'm not asking you if you would pay for Luke's English Podcast. I don't have plans to make the majority of these episodes paid, all right? But Andy is asking because it's part of his research. So Andy's trying to investigate why people are choosing to listen to my podcast, for example, instead of taking traditional language courses, if indeed that is the case. So let Andy know, complete his questionnaire. It'll take you a couple of minutes. It's really going to help him. And then maybe one day in the future, when he's done more research and he's more ready, he can talk to us about his presentation on self-directed learning. So stay tuned for the next episode, part two, the second conversation with Andy, which will be coming soon. In that one, you'll hear Andy talk about his very personal reasons for training to run the London Marathon. And I have to say that the conversation was much more surprising than I'd expected. And it was also actually quite moving for a few reasons. So check that out when it arrives. I think you're really going to enjoy listening to part two of this conversation. Don't forget to join the mailing list on the website so that you will get email notifications whenever new episodes are uploaded over the coming days and weeks. And don't forget to watch out for some website-only content, which will be coming soon too. Thank you very much for listening, and have yourself a great morning, afternoon, evening, night or day, whichever part of the world you're in and whatever you're up to. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.